Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
First you head north till you get to the park. Then you go a few blocks west of Clark. When you start feeling better, you can thank the Lord that you're back home in the 43rd Ward. In the 43rd Ward.
43rd Ward.
In the 43rd
Ward. 43rd
Ward. Oh, I'm feeling great, and I thank the Lord that I'm back home in the 43rd Ward. The Moody Church, they shout and sing of the city four square where the joy bells ring. But go to North and Sedgwick on a Saturday night, there's not a single square in sight. In the 43rd Ward,
43rd Ward,
in the 43rd Ward,
43rd Ward.
Oh, I'm feeling great, and I thank the Lord that I'm back home in the 43rd Ward.
Well, when Strachey singing that song, I suppose, brings reflections to you, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does. I think I remember Win Strachey sitting on our back porch summer evenings belting that song out over all of the 43rd Ward, for that matter. And I think also the first saloon I was ever in, tiny boy, was Patty Baller's old saloon at North and Sedgwick. And Patty, of course, was a famous Chicago Ain't Ready for Reform alderman. Yeah.
But that's where you were born, and that area there. How has that ward and the area which you were born changed?
Oh, I think it's changed as dramatically as any area in the city. When I was growing up in what was then the Old Town Triangle, before there was that explosion of psychedelia on Wells Street, there were a couple old antique stores, no night spots, few restaurants. I remember I knew something was changing there when I was 16 years old and went in a store called the Manatees and bought a pair of bell-bottom pants, which my mother and father were sort of appalled at. They said, what kind of child are you becoming? And now, of course, I've seen Wells Street come and go, and now it's a time for renaissance down there, I think.
But you saw it.
That is the voice of the young 30-something Rick Kogan talking to Studs Terkel, who was then probably 50-something. This entire show is devoted to Studs Terkel. For those of you who still read the Tribune, you might have seen my story in cover of the art section in Studs' nice picture of Studs. My guest here on After Hours is Tony Macaluso, who is the director of syndication at WFMT Radio Network and the guy who is really behind bringing Studs back to life. I know you don't like that responsibility, Tony, but that's what you're doing, isn't it?
It's been a fun journey, yeah, for the last 2 years. You know, Studs did a daily radio show from 1952 to 97,
yeah,
WFMT. He did a lot of other things before and after that. Books, of course,
sure,
theater, television shows, other radio drama. But this 45-year stretch when he left behind 5,600 programs, A few hundred got taped over along the way, but we're pretty lucky that from the get-go they were being saved and archived. And Studs' intention always was, when he finished doing the radio show, that these someday be as accessible as possible.
The great thing about Studs, having known him, is he barely knew how to use, and he would fake it a little, use a tape recorder. The whole notion that Studs would think that these tapes will somehow live on after him, and he couldn't have conceived in a moment what digitalizing tapes would have been. He was not a social media guy. He was not a high-tech guy. That's a very prescient thing for him.
That's what's fascinating, to think that when he's already back in the late 50s, these were being saved. And there's some great videos. BBC did a documentary at one point. You see Studs showing off the collection and very proudly, very much aware that this was something. And there were binders with lists of people. And for people who don't know the scope of what Studs did, he interviewed writers, every novelist, poet, nonfiction writer you can think of, but also musicians in almost every genre you could imagine.
Well, the great thing about it, and you helped me so much with this piece that ran Sunday, I write in the story, the list of his guests is frankly astonishing. It's surreal almost. This is just of Buster Keaton, Jacques Cousteau, Saul Alinsky, Allen Ginsberg, Ethel Merman, Cesar Chavez, Woody Allen, Bertrand Russell, Shirley MacLaine, James Baldwin, Mahalia Jackson, Janis Joplin, Hunter S. Thompson, David Mamet, Carol Channing, Gwendolyn Brooks, Mort Saul, the Reverend Martin Luther King, Pete Seeger, and Muhammad Ali. That is just a tiny
sampling
of it.
And about 5,575 more, right?
Well, but the, also the other thing, now that you've begun to really explore this, you have learned, I think when people, I've gotten a lot of emails saying, oh, I remember Studs' interview with so-and-so, and I remember Studs' interview with so-and-so. There were a lot of other kinds of programs. There were some days where Studs just read poetry and read short stories, right?
Poetry, short stories, of course, being a kind of disc jockey, but a disc jockey like none other when it was called the Wax Museum in particular.
Yeah.
But then these in-the-field recordings, the Great Blizzard, when Studs trudged around for 48 hours with his portable Ure tape recorder talking to cab drivers and people in Five and Dimes and these kinds of things. But then international trips, South Africa in 1963, the year that Mandela was sentenced to the prison term. China in the early 80s, Studs was going to write a book on China. The Soviet Union, Italy hanging out with Fellini and people like that. France with Simone and the rest. And on, Denmark, England, Japan, etc.
Now, you listened as a young man to Studs. I mean, you knew who Studs was.
Yeah, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, going to high school in the mid to late 80s, and I remember taking trips into the city, going to little experimental theaters, drinking coffee at Golden Nuggets and Golden Apples, and driving back, and 10 o'clock at night was when Studs' show got shifted to 10 o'clock at night at a certain point, and that's when I started to really discover it, driving back from these excursions to the city and then hearing these amazing interviews. And then the books actually came later.
Yeah, one of the things about what Studs did is it flies in the face of, with all due respect to contemporary radio, it flies in the face of the, and I wrote this in the piece also, the, so tell me what your blank is about and do it in 7 minutes. Studs' conversations were these, you didn't know where they were going to go, so there was a sense of surprise in almost every one of them.
And he had an hour to work with, which is amazing. And just the, and that's something you hear talking to people who Studs interviewed, talking to Stuart Dybeck or Alex Kotlowitz, lots of other people, and how the experience of being interviewed by Studs, or not even being interviewed, having a conversation with Studs was like almost nothing else.
Well, that thing we heard to begin the show was Studs interviewing me in honor. Well, he was my father. He and my father were best friends, so he'd interview me no matter what. But there was a collection published called Dr. Nightlife Chicago. And not only did he spice this hour, it was pretty intimidating. I actually think it was my first time I was ever on the radio. And he had songs, and then he would read things from the book. And after the show was over, he said, Rick, did you ever have a good time? I go, Studs, a good time. It was astonishing. What's the secret? What's the secret? Read the book. All you got to do is read the book. We'll be right back on After Hours. I'm spending this whole hour with my friend Tony Macaluso, who is the director of syndication at the WFMT Radio Network. That's his sort of title. But what he's doing and will be doing, I guess, for the next 25 years, is cataloging and organizing the 5,600 hours of Studs Terkel's radio shows, whether they be interviews with the celebrated, interviews with the so-called ordinary people, trips to places like Selma, Alabama, reading of poetry and short stories, or also putting on dramatic plays. You got some initial seed money from the National Endowment for the Arts.
About a year and a half ago.
To start digitizing and organizing and hiring those fine two women who are your colleagues, Allison Chain and Grace Radkins, and it's basically the three of you have been doing this, right?
Yeah, with some support from the bigger organization, and actually the Library of Congress, fantastic gang there, have been doing all the digitizing, and that gives us the ability to take all these tapes and then build on it. And basically the archive, in a quick nutshell, there's four pieces of it. What does it mean to take a lifetime's work of Studs Terkel,
right, and
build an archive?
Don't, yeah, right. You just don't. It's not like some disorganized library of tapes. It's an organized library. It's meant to be.
And really, what it means is a website or a place where people can get to it, whether it's through a phone or an internet or a laptop or whatever it might be, whatever comes next. Who knows? And make it so that you can search. You have transcripts. You can read things. You can type in a single specific word. You can type in Ricardo's and find every mention of Ricardo's someday, which there'll probably be quite a few.
That's terrifying, yeah.
Which, for those who don't know, that's the...
the famous writer's artist hangout a block from the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, so to make it all searchable, have tools where you can grab, highlight a couple sentences and drag it, and you actually drag the audio with it. And the idea is that a teacher, a journalist, a scholar...
A radio producer, a television artist,
somebody making a documentary film, that there's wide open access to use all this stuff. So whether someone wants to grab, you know, Louis Armstrong or Simone de Beauvoir, or
with the young Rick Kogan being interviewed about Dr. Nightlife Chicago, that's going to have a lot of uses in the future. You can go easily to studsterkel.org to be. That will lead you to, among other things, 400 or so shows that have already been digitized and that you can hear, correct, Tony Macaluso?
The 400 shows and some videos. That's the beginning of the rabbit hole once you go to studsterkel.org, and then eventually everything will be there.
Well, what you should go to, too, is on Thursday was launched a Kickstarter campaign to raise the funds necessary to continue this project, because you and Grace and Allison probably listened to 2,000 of the 5,600 tapes.
Pretty close between us, yeah.
Yeah, because 3,600 still need to be digitized, and then they need to be organized. So all of you fine people who have written me these wonderful notes saying, oh, I can't wait, I can't wait, I can't wait, you can help facilitate this thing by going to Kickstarter. Just go to studsterkel.org, listen to a couple shows, if that's what you have a mind to, and then go to the Kickstarter page. And there are all sorts of cool things you can get. You can't, like, sit down and have drinks with studs. Those days are sort of over. But that's important, is it not, Tony?
It is, yeah, because this week has really been a two-year build-up to a kind of a pivot point where the Studs Archive really goes public in a major way. And so in addition to the Tribune article, Rolling Stone, Time,
The Reader,
on a national level, even some international publications. There's a great radio producer at the BBC who's working on some documentaries for BBC Three Radio later this year. So the plan is to really demonstrate what's possible with this.
Well, and also it's being used in schools, too. See, this is one place where, you know, it's all well and good to read some kind of historical accounts in books. It is so much more visceral to hear those people talking.
Well, this idea, what Studs has phrased, the feeling tone, and talking with history teachers and English teachers and others, this idea that students can hear the voices of what people were saying down in Selma in 1965, in February of 65. And Studs was there recording it, all the voices, the marchers, the National Guard, the taxi
drivers.
Let's
listen to something. Tony brought in a sampling of, you know, maybe six different cuts, 2 or 3 minute long cuts from Studs' show. And instead of being the sort of normal radio folk, we are not normal radio folk. We're just going to ask Aubrey Mumpower to just play one. We're not going to set it up, as they say, for you. We will be not quite as surprised as you are, but we'll talk about each one afterward. Aubrey, would you just pick one?
The city sees it all. Homicide, suicide, bribery, extortion, blackmail, double cross, and betrayal. A night rain that comes unannounced after the marquee lights are darkened washes the pavements clean for the break of the ordinary day. Then the city stands to one side, seeing all the wet work once more undone. Homicide, suicide, bribery, extortion, blackmail, the double cross, and betrayal. The gypsy switch, the glim-dropping racket, the penny-matching gambit, the pigeon-dropping caper. Can you let me have 2/10 for a 5? No, Your Honor, I had no intention of robbing that place. I was leaning against the window when it gave in. So I stepped inside to leave my name and address so I could make the damage good. Yes, that was what I was doing, looking for the cash register. A pencil and paper to write my name and address on. No, lady, I never seen you before. You must be somebody else's wife. No, Your Honor, I've never been arrested in Illinois before. I love my state too much for that. I go to Wisconsin to steal. Officers, I'll make a deal with you. If you leave me alone, I'll let you alone. The city is long-suffering. It endures. The city is a sort of hero's hero. beginning all over, day after day. The city is an absent-minded Achilles who has gone so punchy he can't remember one day to the next what happened to him the day before. City of the big gray flannel shoulders, here we come at you on little cat feet again. Stormy, husky, brawling, crawling. City of the iron motto saying I will. But what are we going to do about all these fools who keep saying, man, I just can't? Yipping, yapping, yawping, coughing. They told me you were crooked. And I said, show me another city with a judge who takes your 500 is so sure to keep his word. What's so crooked about that? They told me you were brutal. And I said, show me another city so proud to be alive, where you can have murder reduced to manslaughter, and manslaughter to a misdemeanor, and get your gun back. What's so brutal about that? Yet they keep saying justice is miscarrying. So I hurried to the Bridewell, where they cure girls who have drug habits by having them mill around a day room 10 or 12 months, till they get so fond of milling that they forget all about heroin. And I ask through the bars, girls, is there a case in here of justice miscarrying? And little broad with nappy hair down front said,
I wouldn't know, mister. I didn't have a lawyer.
There are side street bars that burn all night, blue oases and deserts of pavement and rail. Between the pretzel bowl and the pinball machine wait nobody's, nobody knows. Waiting for the wind to die down or the rain to cease, a World Series to start and a score to come in, for snow to stop falling or a day to end. There are blue oases that burn all night in deserts of pavement between rail and rail, where nobody's, nobody knows, wait the whole night long, each for his own lifelong life to begin. Whom is it?
Whom is this?
It's me, baby. I'm going to North Avenue by boathouse.
I can't go by North Avenue. I gotta fix my ma's hair. What you have for breakfast?
Mush with a spoon is what we had.
That's the voice of Nelson Algren from many, many, many decades ago, talking to Studs Terkel about one of his short stories. Tony Michaelis, you must listen to these over and over again.
Yeah, I have to say, walking around different neighborhoods of the city and hearing these voices, and Nelson and many of the others too, I mean, it really is the audio equivalent of the layers of Chicago architecture,
yeah.
Of the grime and grit and rust of the CTA, of the L, but in human voice.
Yeah, it's haunting. Haunting. We could take a commercial break. I'm keeping Tony Macaluso all the way to 11 o'clock, and you'll hear some more excerpts from the radio archive of Studs Terkel. Tony is charged with, he's the director of syndication for the WFMT radio network, but he is the man with Allison Shannon, Grace Ratings, putting together Studs Terkel Radio Archive. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tony Macaluso, my guest this entire hour, is not just a fan of Studs Terkel's. He is trying to make everybody on the planet a fan of Studs Terkel's, and they would be if you would go to studsterkel.org. Sample it. Have a listen to some of the shows that are posted there, and then click that Kickstarter button and give some money to the effort to further digitize and organize and send out into the world more of the 5,600 hours of Studs Terkel interviewing everybody. It is one of the most important, the archive itself, the Studs Terkel Radio Archive, is one of the most important collections of the, he interviewed everybody in the last, of any importance, arts, politics, labor.
One of the things that's been really fascinating is seeing how different people are already using it in new ways. Because the archive is both about looking back and being able to dive into history, but also have this be a launching pad for going forward. Well, everything from big media things, This American Life, Ira Glass used a bit of Mike Royko in his show a while back, the BBC. We've had French National Radio did a documentary on Simone de Beauvoir last year and used a bunch of material from Studs with Simone and Nelson.
Her lover, Nelson. Yeah.
And one of my favorites that we'll hear in a little bit was this 20-some-year-old radio producer did an entry for a radio competition last year that the Third Coast Audio Festival did, asking people to use the Studs archive as a source of inspiration for new ways of telling stories. And we'll hear one of those in a little bit, which is really exciting.
Let me ask you, Tony, before we hear a clip of maybe one of Studs' most unusual shows when it was hijacked by two of his friends, what is it? You've listened to so much of this. What is it about Studs that made him Studs?
I think it's a lot of things. To me, I think part of it is that he was a few things. He was somebody who had theater in his blood. Well, even more than theater, the kind of the theater for him was his mother's boarding house in the lobby, and this idea of people sitting around, or Bug House Square, people being in a public space or a semi-public space, exchanging information that really mattered, not just gossip, not just chit-chat, but really meaningful information. During the Great Depression in the early 30s, you know, incredibly smart people talking about Nietzsche and Greek tragedy and
Well, but it was a great
economy.
Combination. You know, the people you saw in Bug House Square and in his mother's rooming house were a collection of intellectuals, lunatics, crazy people, smart people. It was everybody. It was the world sharing.
And I think there was always a sense with almost every interview and radio program that something might be said in the course of that conversation that could change certainly the people having the conversation and even the world around them in some way.
Yeah.
That sense that of uncertainty and a lack of a safety net that's so lacking in a lot of media today.
We're going to hear, no kidding, we're going to hear after the break something Tony was talking about, a young woman who has used Studs in a brand new way. But I want you to listen to this. This, when I've heard this, I've heard the whole show. You can get it at studscircle.org. And if you listen to it, then you have to give money to the Kickstarter campaign. This is my father, Studs is arguably his best friend, Mike Royko, a good buddy of Studs, and someone who greatly admired Studs and vice versa. Mike used to call Studs college boy, which would make Studs giggle. Good, Mike hadn't gone to college. They hijacked his show in January 1967, and here's a portion of that.
This is a very auspicious occasion. The day the publication of his book, Division Street America. And as we pick him up off the floor...
I am floored. I have nothing to say at the moment.
You're going to talk.
One of these rare occasions, I'm inarticulate. I really am quite... I expect Nancy Wilson Ross taped this one. This happened just this very moment. Highly improvisational. I'm a little nervous. Mike Royko, to my left. I mean that geographically, not ideologically.
Yeah, he's taking over the program. Now, we're going to take over. We've taken over the program.
You start. You just sit there.
I know how Studs doesn't like trite questions, and in his preface to Division Street America, he talks about the fact that he did not ask many of the people in the book trite questions. But we're going to start with a very original and very untrite question, Studs. How did you come to write Division Street America?
Well, it came about accidentally. I'm beginning to believe more and more in chance than I always thought everything is worked out. And now we know about the world of the absurd, yet I think the man has some will. It came about because one day I met Andre Schifrin, and this is accidentally. Here's a crazy story. The establishment was in town. The establishment, the young English players, and on the program were Johnny Bird and Ellen LeBron, who've become quite popular in England. With another program, not a program, but a way of life. And Eleanor Brown went to Cambridge with a guy named Andre Schifrin. His father was a great publisher in pre-Hitler Germany, a Pantheon. And then I think he worked with Gallimard Press, his father did in Paris, the publishers of Camus and Sartre. And Pantheon came to America. It's now a subsidiary of Random House. And Andre always is looking for something different. And one day I think he had heard some of the interviews WFMT carries on the New York station, WRVR, and was taken with him and had this idea. This is a long story, but I can shorten it.
Go ahead.
Well, A Report from a Chinese Village is a book written by Gunnar Myrdal's son, Jan Myrdal. And one day Andre calls, how about Report from an American Village? And of course, here came the great difficulty. A small town in China, a revolution, an event, a fact. People put their hands on it. The Light was not a political book. It was their life before and after people this village. Now, this could not possibly be done with a large American city with so many things happening at one and the same time, that which Bob Hutchins' committee in California calls the triple revolution. So therefore, it had to be, there was no plan. It had to be, I had to find certain people, not a survey, not motivational research, just guerrilla journalism, I call it. So some were accidental, finding a kid who drives a cab who says, this kid started one day, I was starting on the interview, just interviewed two Appalachian people who became very urbanized and rather seared and tough. I left them on Campbell Street, Campbell Avenue. It was a stormy night last year, took this cab. And first, this kid sees this tape recorder that I was fooling around with and goofing up. And he says, did you see Lord Jim, the movie? And I said, no, it's about courage. In fact, it's about me. And he starts talking. And next thing, he's a member of the John Birch Society. He tells me why he didn't tell me why he joined, but I wanted to know why. And so I met him the next day at a bar. Maybe he had gin and squirt. I had something tougher. And then we went into his car. He drives the cab part-time, has exterminator factory. And he joined because he wants to be someone. And out of this came an interview. I felt he's very humane. It's easy to rap a John Birch Society member. That's not the answer. It's why does someone become that?
That is the show. You can listen to the entire show at studsterkel.org. Just, plug in Herman Kogan, Studs Terkel, and Mike Royko. Mike does get involved in the conversation. But the great thing about the show is Studs still talks 90% of the time on a show where he's being interviewed. We'll be back with Tony Macaluso. And when you go to studsterkel.org, click on that little Kickstarter button and help bring more thousands of hours of Studs Terkel interviews, monologues, and dramatic shows to the world. Okay, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the last 10 minutes of After Hours with me, Rick Kogan, and Tony Macaluso, the director of syndication of WFMT Radio Network, and the man who, with two, Grace and Allison, is bringing the Studs Terkel Radio Archive to life. You can go to studsterkel.org. You can go to studsterkel.wfmt.com. You can listen to, there are a number of shows, maybe 400-ish, that have already been digitized, and you can listen to them. You can listen to that famous Herman Kogan, Mike Royko, Studs Terkel interview. You can fool around there. And then when you get a taste of that, then go to the Kickstarter campaign and give them some dough so that thousands more of these shows can come alive. And as you said, Tony Macaluso, and you're doing God's work here, pal, that this can be used in so many different ways, and we're going to listen to an example. What is it?
So this is the Third Coast Audio Festival. Great partners and friends of ours. They do a big festival that brings radio producers from all over the world to Chicago once a year. They did a competition last year. They do an annual competition called the Short Docs, and they invite radio producers, especially younger radio producers, to make a three-minute radio documentary. Every year there's a different theme. Last year's theme was the Studs Terkel Archive. Mm. There were about 150 submissions from all over the world, and this was one of the winners. And let's just hear it. This is 3 minutes, and this just made my jaw drop when I first heard it and really opened up the possibilities for how the archive can be used in unexpected and beautiful new ways.
Here you are, ladies and gentlemen. Pay attention.
Dear Studs, it's April. It's dusk. I'm thinking about my trip to the bone-chilling East Coast this winter. I got to tromp around in the middle of a snowstorm with my childhood best friend and record that laugh of hers. But there are a few moments from that trip that I just can't shake. Can I share them with you?
Of course.
Okay, so I held this wide-eyed, cooing 6-week-old baby. And then spent time with my 91-year-old, typically very articulate grandpa.
Get in here. This is Marvin.
Clearly beginning to lose track of his words.
Lions? No, not lions. Musicals.
People growing old and dying if we must be born again. For what's the use of living? Playing, 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 small children playing.
That's my friend Emily's daughter, Addie.
Can you help me?
To feel needed is terribly important.
I know. Addie picks out a bedtime story for us to read.
What's it called?
My book. Because I want you to read it.
We read the book, and I go to say goodnight and...
Goodnight, Addie.
I love you.
Oh, man, did you hear that?
You love me?
Goodnight. Love you.
Love you.
I leave the room and try clasping one of those childproof safety gates and give up and...
Wait a minute. You just paused. Now, you said something. Now, why did you pause?
I paused, Studs, because what happened next was that I turned off my recorder and I cried my eyes out. 6 months earlier, I gave birth to my daughter, Lilia, and she died in my arms 3 days later. I paused because when you're 6 months postpartum without your child and your friend's child sits in your lap and tells you she loves you, it's... haunting and somehow holy. It's exactly what I needed, and it's heartbreaking as hell.
Vulnerability.
Vulnerability.
You make me aware of my mortality and vulnerability.
I'm doing my best.
Oh, Lord of mercy.
Wow. I see what you mean, Tony. I see what you mean. I mean, it's like, you know, you can have conversations with Studs for eternity, thanks to the archive.
And in this era of podcasting and with technology, which of course is a double-edged sword, but so many younger people and working with high school students as well, this idea that they can make, you know, Louis Armstrong or Nelson Algren and Simone talk to people today, weaving voices together in new ways. And so this young woman, Sarah. Brooke Curtis, you know, essentially had a dialogue with Studs to think through the process of the fact that she lost her daughter in the last year and turned it into something really special.
You're so vastly younger than I, and you, we both know sort of the kind of technology that is at play now, but I think of someone like my daughter Fiona, who's 11, and what she met Studs, and what she, when she's 25, what kind of technology she might be able to avail herself of to use Studs to tell stories.
And one of the hopes is that all that new technology and those new places things can go can mingle with the voices and the ideas and the values and of Chicago from the 1950s and the 1960s, yeah, and even Chicago of the 1920s and 30s, because that's also brought into the mix and to really tie things together across decades.
Yeah. This must be, I know it's a lot of work for you, but this also must be incredibly rewarding for you.
Well, and it's a great time in radio. I remember when we first talked about the archive about a year and a half, yeah, 2 years ago at a radio conference, and people from all over the country, from different radio stations and radio shows, it was really clear from the reaction that Studs was probably the closest thing there is to kind of a patron saint or a founding father of this kind of way of using radio to tell stories. There are, of course, lots of other great radio producers, Norman Corwin and Orson Welles used radio, and of course a lot of people today. But
well, but no one for this length of time. I mean, there are clips of old radio, great radio dramas here and there, but no one for this length of time and in the kind of depth that Studs did what he did, to have that kind of archive is, frankly, to my mind, priceless. Do you think of it that way? You must.
We do, yeah.
You
very
must.
So.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tony Macaluso, the director of syndication for WFMT Radio Network, has been my guest, and he's the point person. I like that's his phrase. He likes that phrase, point person, behind the Studs Terkel Radio Archive with Allison and Grace and a number of other people. Everybody wants to help. You can help by just going. It's not give us money. Go to studsterkel.org, dip in. Listen to a show. Pick somebody you want to hear. Listen to a show. And then click over to the Kickstarter campaign and see what you can do to bring more hundreds, if not thousands, of hours to the world. Tony, you're doing God's work, man. You really are. And I've known you for a while. And you just keep doing better and better stuff.
Thank you.
My pleasure. I will see you soon. I'll see you. We'll go out and have a drink when you've reached the $75,000 Kickstarter goal.